This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
Scam Factory, the explosive new true crime podcast from Wondery, exposes a multi-billion dollar criminal empire operating in plain sight. Every suspicious text you ignore masks a huge network of compounds where thousands are held captive and forced to scam others under the threat of death. Follow Scam Factory on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
Estás escuchando The Fifth Floor.
The Fifth Floor dinliyorsunuz. Bizimle kalın.
Tumhi ekta The Fifth Floor farnak amidi sobat.
This is The Fifth Floor, at the heart of global storytelling with BBC journalists from all around the world. I'm your host, Farnak Amidi. It's the falling from glory story of Irina Venner, the woman who's been at the helm of producing world-class Russian rhythmic gymnasts. For years, Russia has dominated the sport, winning multiple Olympic golds and world championships. Venner, a woman with a fearsome reputation, has been leading the Russian athletes through their success for over two decades. But it seems her reign has come to an end. As last year, the Ministry of Sport dissolved the Russian Rhythmic Gymnastics Federation to create a new gymnastics body in which Irina Venner has no part. I spoke to Lisa Focht of BBC Russian, who has been looking into this story. She started by telling me who exactly this woman is.
Irina Venner is probably one of the most famous sports figures in Russia. She's 76 years old, has a lot of experience. She's basically been in control of Russian rhythmic gymnastics for more than 20 years. And she managed to reach this absolute domination within Russia and on an international arena, too. She's really a legendary coach. Everyone in Russia knows who she is. She's been a member of the Russian elite for a very long time. She's been Vladimir Putin's campaign surrogate multiple times, took part in his campaign, openly supported him, even after 2022, when Russia invaded Ukraine. For a very long time, she was married to one of the most powerful and richest businessmen in Russia, Kremlin-friendly oligarch Usmanov. Her students won a lot of world titles, Olympic Games, and just she managed to achieve absolute domination in this sport.
And tell us about her character. She is somewhat infamous. She's known to be quite a tough coach.
Yes. She's someone who's known to push her students to their limits. She can be very rude sometimes. She uses colorful language. There was this famous documentary a couple of years back about her training one of her students, Margarita Mamun, for her Olympic Games in 2016 in Rio in Brazil. And it's actually very tough to watch it because it's like an hour long testimony of how much she pushes those girls, how much sometimes she even abuses them. She uses words like you're an idiot, you're a coward. So it's a very tough and I would say toxic environment. And I think it's more common in Russian sports than on the international arena, where I think things have been changing, you know, recently. Like, do you remember when Simone Biles said that she's going to step down for a little while because of her issues? Everyone basically was very supportive of that. And this is something that it's still very hard to imagine in Russia in this current climate. But given how tough it usually is, I think like Venner methods, they just stand out. I think there's one episode that I really come back to it all the time in this documentary when this girl, Margarita Mamun, she's practicing her routine. And her story was that while she was preparing for the Olympic Games, her father was dying of cancer back at home. And there's an episode where she's practicing her routine and Venner is shouting at her and she's saying, you should perform it like you're praying to God, like you're asking God to save your father. Can you imagine this level of pressure? I think it's unbelievable. The end goal for any Russian gymnast competing in this sport is to win the gold medal. There's no second place, no, it's just unacceptable for her. So there's only one goal, and Venner just pushes her students again to their limit to do that. She's also known to be very mean about their appearance. There's a lot of body shaming. She can openly say that someone's fat, that someone needs to lose weight. So it's a very tough and toxic environment. And I think it's very important to understand that usually little girls who get into this, they get there very young because they need to be very flexible to get in the shape that's required for this very, very technical, very difficult sport. So we're talking about teenagers here. We're not talking about grown-up women who can stand up for themselves.
In your story, there is another rising star in the scene, and her name is Alina Kabayeva. Tell us about her.
Alina Kabayeva is basically one of the most famous athletes in Russia. She's one of the most decorated gymnasts in this sport with her two Olympic medals, one of them gold. She won it in 2004 in Athens, 14 world championship medals, and I think more than 20 European championship medals. And of course, she was basically brought to this success by Irina Viner. She retired from the sport in 2007. And since then has mostly been famous, I think, in the world as reportedly the longtime partner of Russian President Vladimir Putin. Of course, the Kremlin always denied that there's any relationship between them because there were different rumors, rumors about them getting married, rumors about them having kids, always dismissed by the Kremlin. But for instance, in 2022, the closed relationship between them, between Vladimir Putin and Kabayeva, was cited as basically justification for the sanctions imposed on Kabayeva by the US, UK, and European Union. And I think important to understand that Putin's personal life is known to be strictly tabooed in Russia. And this is why we don't really know anything about his familial links. What we do know for a fact that after retiring from her sporting career in 2007, Kabayeva's basically rise very rapidly into the Russian elite, just as her coach Irina Viner. She served for 7 years as the member of the Russian parliament. Since then, chaired the board of one of the biggest media groups in Russia, controlling a lot of TV channels. And this group belongs to one of Vladimir Putin's closest allies. I think the most important thing about this is, despite occupying this very prominent position, she always avoided appearances in public, remained in the shadows, and almost never engaged with the media for a very long time. One of the hardest members of the Russian elite to get to. It was virtually impossible for media, for journalists to talk to her. She would appear once a year for her charity work or something like this, and then just disappeared back to the shadows until recently.
And is her face a well-recognized face? People know her?
Yes, everyone knows her. You know, I remember this because, like, when she was at the height, like, of her career, I was a 10-year-old girl in Moscow. And I remember her face being basically everywhere. One of the most famous Russians. There were songs about her. She was often present at those glamorous events, awards. And then she just disappeared from the public eye for a long time, completely absent, which was really weird, but not so weird if you knew about those reports about her connection with Vladimir Putin.
Mm-hmm. And today she's set up her own gymnastics school. It's called Heavenly Grace. Did that come as a surprise to people?
Yes. Things for her changed in the autumn of 2022 after the full-scale war in Ukraine was well underway. And she announced the formation of her own school, Heavenly Grace, as you said, or Sky Grace. And the academy opened in the Black Sea resort of Sochi. She got a building from the state natural gas company Gazprom, also very famous. And then Kabayeva, already by that time sanctioned in the West, suddenly just came back into the arena of public attention. She started to give interviews. She started to appear as a coach, like with her students in her academy. It happened like that click, and she's suddenly back. Her academy set her own Telegram channel, and they constantly put those little videos of her talking to those little girls, explaining them how to do different routines, how to perform with a ribbon, with a ball, and everything. They were allowed to choose the rules under which it hosts its own tournaments, separately from those which were long established for rhythmic gymnastics at home and abroad, and basically hand out different awards and titles at its own discretion. It was a unique situation for any Russian sports. And on top of that, I think That was also very interesting. Kabayeva's students were allowed to travel and take part in events held in Europe, competing with neutral status, but that was unprecedented too, because all the gymnasts and athletes from other sports, they were basically suspended after Russia invaded Ukraine in 2022. And yet her students in this neutral status were allowed to travel and take part in those different events, which was unprecedented and weird, because Vinner for a very long time was one of the people who said, no, we shouldn't compete under no flag in this neutral status. We are proud Russians. We're happy to be the Russian patriots. As I said, she openly supported Vladimir Putin and everything. And it felt like Kabayeva's academy took a completely different direction, which was weird because, again, as I said, the sport was fully controlled by Irina Vinner, Kabayeva's former coach. This is why the fact that Alina Kabayeva's club gained such prominence and basically developed out of Irina Vinner's scope of control, that looked weird to many. I think those little videos that you can find on the Heavenly Grace Telegram channel, they're quite fascinating. For instance, you would see like a little girl crying because she can't perform some exercise or something doesn't work or she didn't win a medal or something. And Kabayeva always goes, don't worry about it. It's all going to be fine. It just takes time and effort. You're going to be great. And it's very different from what we used to see in the sport. I think it's very different from what Alina Kabayeva had to face when she was just a young gymnast, because there are videos of Irina Vinner coaching her. And it's, again, very toxic, borderline child abuse approach. And her approach is very different.
The next development was the recent BRICS Games, which were held last year. It's an international competition and many countries actually to participate in it. So what happened at those games went in the field of rhythmic gymnastics?
Those games you're talking about, they were a big deal in Russia because this event was basically pitched by the government as an alternative to the Summer Olympics in Paris, which most of the Russian athletes had to miss. And what was weird about it, the tournament in rhythmic gymnastics not only included gymnasts from Russia, Belarus, Kazakhstan, Serbia, other countries from their national teams, but also competitors from the Heavenly Grace Club, who competed under its own banner, basically as a separate entity, as a separate country, distinct from the Russian national team, which was weird. Imagine, just to give you an example, you have a football World Cup and you have England, France, Brazil, Germany national teams, and Chelsea. This is not how it works, right?
Yeah.
Because it's a competition for national teams, but apparently the status that Kabayeva had gained by the time this competition happened just allowed her to participate in a separate state, which was unprecedented. It was a completely unique development, especially given the club was only founded 2 years prior. And I think the explanation for the extraordinary favor was Kabayeva herself and her place in the Russian elite. We don't know exactly what happened during this competition, but it was obvious that something happened and there was a big conflict between Kabayeva and Irina Vinner, her former coach. Technically, when the games concluded, it was Vinner's athlete named Lala Kramarenko who took home the gold. Kabayeva's gymnast, they won the group exercise, and Maria Borisova, this rising star, she finished first. It looked that everyone was pleased with the outcomes, but actually it turned out that this competition had been full of tension. And after the games concluded, a complaint was made to the Russian Ministry of Sport about the way Vinner had behaved during this competition. It was reported that Vinner, during this event, had accused judges of being biased in favor of Kabayeva's team. And she was said to be very displeased with a score awarded to a gymnast of hers. And she approached the judges' table and she was very unhappy. She started complaining and she said to one of the judges, young lady, just because Sky Grace invited you here doesn't mean you have to do their work for them, doesn't mean that you have to award them higher points, which is, again, unprecedented. As you can imagine, coaches are not allowed to press the judges. So the sports minister, after that, wrote to her after this complaint that this kind of behavior cannot be justified, which was very significant because, again, the place that she used to take in Russian sports was so prominent. She was so powerful that you could never imagine someone as the minister of sport talking to her that way, because her status was much higher than of any minister.
And what is her job right now after all of this?
Her career basically came off the rails after this incident, because first, last autumn, the sports ministry announced that the Rhythmic Gymnastics Federation, which Vinner had led for 15 years, was to be dissolved. And basically, they formed a new catch-all federation for gymnastics, and the chair was handed to the head of Russia's railway network, and Vinner didn't even get a seat on the board of this new federation.
A proper shaker.
Yes. She claimed that she had gone willingly. She said that this position was a heavy burden, and she wanted to relinquish those responsibilities for a very long time, and no one was willing to take them on. But it looked weird for people who had been following her career for a very long time. It was hard to imagine that she would willingly give power away. Then, mid-October, a decree from Vladimir Putin removed her from the Council for the Development of Physical Culture and Sports. It's a council that's basically arranged by Putin. People on this council, they meet president all the time, and they have some power over what's happening in Russian sports. There's just like influential people gathered by Putin discussing Russian sports, and she was dismissed from this council. She remained the head coach of the national team. It was the only formal position that Vinner was allowed to retain. But we talked to different sports journalists for the story, and they said that for someone of her status to be just a coach, it was impossible to imagine, especially in rhythmic gymnastics, because it's a pretty average role, because each girl basically has her own personal trainer, personal coach. And the head coach is basically just some kind of a manager, someone who says something like, let's all meet for training tomorrow at 7 a.m.
And there has been further development just a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, she announced that she's going to step down as the head coach of the national team too. Oh. So now she's completely displaced from the sport that she controlled for more than 20 years, which is a big shakeup.
It seems like her reign is over. And do you think that Kabaeva is the next winner, basically?
I don't think that Alina Kabaeva wants or needs to be the head of national team, because it's a lot of responsibilities, right? I mean, you need to do all this necessary bureaucracy. She is allowed to just run it as she wants, because of all the power that Russian Ministry of Sports and other bodies gave to her academy. Her student just won the Russian nationals, and everyone basically is used. She's in charge. No one is going to remember the names of people who chair the federation or the national team, but everyone knows her name, and I think it suits her just fine.
And Lisa, there are other examples of women who reportedly have links to Putin, who used to be absent from public life, but they are stepping into the spotlight these days. Can you give us some examples of these women? Who are they?
Yes, you're right. Last year, suddenly, his alleged relatives finally began to emerge. And apart from Kabaeva, we're talking about his eldest daughters. He has two. Last January, his eldest daughter, whose name is Maria Varantsova, gave a surprise interview about healthcare. She's a doctor. And then in the summer, she spoke at the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum. It's one of the most important events of the year for Russia's elite. And so did her younger sister, Katerina Tikhonova. They both appeared at this forum, which was remarkable. And they were not even the only relatives of Putin in attendance. There was another panel at this forum where Anna Tsevilova, his first cousin once removed, appeared. And until recently, she was known mainly as just the wife of one of the regional governors of Russia. And then journalists suddenly discovered that Tsevilova was Putin's first cousin once removed. And after that, her career really took off. She publicly appeared with Putin, became more visible in the media. And a year later, Putin appointed her deputy defense minister. And again, that's all happening at the height of Russia's invasion to Ukraine. As you can imagine, pretty prominent and important position, deputy defense minister. And I think it's important to notice that she had never worked in defense or indeed in the government. And yeah, and again, it was the turn of Alina Kabaeva, who once, as I said, was largely absent from the public eye. And now she regularly appears on national televisions as well as online as the head of her own rhythmic gymnastics academy.
Why is this happening? Why all of a sudden these women are stepping out of the shadows and into the spotlight?
It's a very good question. We don't have, sadly, one definite answer to it. I think it's a testament to how the war in Ukraine, I think basically the environment in which Russia's elite operates is just completely different than a couple of years back. And it made it possible for Putin's relatives to come out of hiding. It didn't only happen to Putin. People from his administration, senior businessmen, their kids also starting their careers, becoming more and more prominent in the system. They're chairing important companies. They're becoming ministers. They work in the government. And yes, Putin's relatives, of course, they have a special status, but they're still part of the same system, right?
Mm-hmm.
The war in Ukraine, on the one hand, it increased this pressure on the elite, right? Because of sanctions, because of everything. But also, it's a paradox. It became possible for the first time for them to move in the open without caring about public opinion.
Mm.
For instance, the appointment of his relative as a deputy defense minister might be seen as nepotism on the one hand. But who has time to worry about corruption when Russia's army just turning Ukrainian cities into dust and there are so many other things happening? Who is going to challenge that? And it's not clear whether Russian society takes any issues with that. And even if they do, most of the independent journalists, they were pushed out of the country and they don't have to worry about sanctions anymore because they're already sanctioned. So for at some point, I think the war just gave his family this freedom to just act as they please.
Thank you, Lisa, for that fascinating insight.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lisa Vogt of BBC Russian. This is the documentary from the BBC World Service.
Scam Factory, the explosive new true crime podcast from Wondery, exposes a multi-billion-dollar criminal empire operating in plain sight. Every suspicious text you ignore masks a huge network of compounds where thousands are held captive and forced to scam others under the threat of death. Follow Scam Factory on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Fifth Floor, and I'm Farhanah Khamidi. Let's go to central Java, Indonesia, where a natural fire is said to have been burning for over 500 years. It happens because of a natural phenomenon, and many hope to harness the power of this eternal flame to help solve the country's energy crisis. Ayomi Amendoni from BBC Indonesian has more.
In Grobogan, central Java province, there is a natural fire called the Merapen Eternal Flame. The flame is called eternal because the fire keeps burning, or if it's go out, it can be reignited. It's basically a small fire that just keeps burning without anyone adding wood or petrol. And in addition to that, residents in nearby Rajik village frequently encounter natural gas when digging wells.
Indonesia itu potensi gas rawanya dari ujung Sumatera ya, Aceh sampai Papua itu menyebar.
So actually, eternal flames can be found in many places around the world. Geologists say eternal fire exists because of natural gas trapped underneath the earth and can escape through cracks in the rock. This gas is called a swamp gas or biogenic shallow gas. And usually, this gas containing methane and hydrogen sulfide is found at depth of 30 to 40 meters. People often find these gas deposits when digging for water wells, like residents in Rajek village. So as far as we know, the Merapen Eternal Flame has been burning for over 500 years. There are many local legends and folklore connected to this flame. It is believed that a religious leader stuck his walking stick into the ground looking for water, but then he found fire instead. The flame is considered sacred by Muslim or Buddhist alike. Buddhists use this flame in their Vesak ceremonies to commemorate the birth of Buddha. And elsewhere in this world, tales of eternal flames appear in local folklore and even in the Bible. Some of them must have been burning for thousands of years.
Ya, setiap kemarau panjang, warga, terutama keluarga saya itu kekurangan air.
In Rajek village in central Java, people have learned to harness this gas and use it for their power supply. I spoke to a local resident of Rajek village, Abdul Aziz, who told me that he was the first one to use the gas to power his stove in 2007. I also spoke to a geologist who, after studying this flame and gas, worked with local authorities to help build an infrastructure that now serves 40 families in the village. So they take this gas from the underground deposit and safely deliver it to people's home. In Indonesia, there's a huge energy crisis and families in rural areas have to buy tanks of liquefied petroleum gas or LPG. And by using this natural gas, the people of Rajek can save money and have a more sustainable way of powering their houses.
Nah, kalau khusus di Jawa Tengah, itu pemerintah Provinsi Jawa Tengah pernah melakukan.
So actually, the swamp gas is also found throughout Indonesia. In Central Java alone, it has been recorded a swamp gas potential of more than 14 million standard cubic feet. And by mid-2023, six government-built pipeline installation in Central Java served hundreds of households. Because of this huge potential, many people can use this gas in the future. But it has to do with government willingness to build infrastructure and distribute this gas to the households.
Ayomi Amendoni from BBC Indonesian. And if you want to let us know what you think about the show or you have questions for our amazing correspondents, send an email to thefifthfloor@bbc.co.uk. That's thefifthfloor, all one word, at bbc.co.uk. I'm Farhana Khamidi. The Fifth Floor team this week was
Alicia Joya,
Caroline Ferguson,
and
Hannah Dean.
You've been listening to The Documentary from the BBC World Service.
Scam Factory, the explosive new true crime podcast from Wondery, exposes a multi-billion-dollar criminal empire operating in plain sight. Every suspicious text you ignore masks a huge network of compounds where thousands are held captive and forced to scam others under the threat of death. Follow Scam Factory on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts.